This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I'm so glad you came. I have a wonderful guest today, and I've had him on a few times. He's our, like, resident COVID vaccine and medical consultant. I just gave him a title for the show, but he actually is a physician. He practices down in the South, in the Augusta and South Carolina area, and he's with a firm, which is actually a medical firm, I'm going to call it that, called the Center for Preventive Care. And here he is again. It's Dr. Robert Clark. Thank you, Bob. You're back.
Yes, I am. I thank you for having me, Toni. Yeah, it's actually Center for Primary Care. Center for Primary Care, and I'm in Augusta. Yeah.
Augusta, Georgia, Center for Primary Care. And Dr. Clark has spoken to us, I'd say since March off and on, we've had him on for updates on what's going on with the coronavirus. And today we're going to talk about, and he's going to tell us about what he knows about the new vaccines and the new variant in corona, because there's a new strain that's going around that's getting people very concerned about their well-being. So welcome back, Bob.
Oh, thank you. We'll just jump right in, because I think there's a lot of questions about the vaccine. You know, my patients, and I'll just say this, most people get excited about the variances and how the viruses mutate and those things. But as I said to many people, never be concerned about the mutations. Viruses mutate all the time. And if you think about measles, which is a vaccine that's been around for a very long time, measles vaccine mutates all the time also. Okay, so think about tetanus. Tetanus, we've had that vaccine a long time. It mutates too. Hepatitis B, we've had that one for a long time. It mutates too. So you really don't get too excited about the mutations. What you really want to know is, does the vaccine prevent death and hospitalizations? That's the whole point of getting the vaccine, is that does it prevent me from ever going to the hospital, and does it prevent me from dying? And that's the most important thing. And all of the vaccines do that, including against all the variances. And so that's the most important thing. And some of them, especially the new one, the Johnson & Johnson, that one actually gets better over time.
Oh, how does that happen? How does that work that it improves?
Well, the study initially ends, it gets a little technical, but the study initially ends on the 28th day. And so when they're measuring efficiencies, the study actually ends 28 days, and then they check and can do the statistical analysis. And that's when they saw that in the United States, it was 72% effective. But then when they went to the 49th day, it got up to 85% effectiveness and 100% protection against hospitalizations and death. And that's just a one shot. And the other thing is that a lot of people get excited. I have a lot of patients come in and they say, well, I want to check my antibodies to see if I have a protection. You have to be tricky. It's concerned about antibodies is because antibodies are not the only way your body protects itself against infections. There are really four ways the body does it. And I'll keep it simple. It's the memory B cells. Then you have your antibodies, and then you have the T cells, which are the CD4 and the CD8. A lot of people might remember CD4 counts with HIV patients. A lot of people who have HIV, they worry about their CD4 counts, which is part of their immunity. HIV virus knocks out their immunity by knocking out their T cells and their CD4 counts. And so when your body is fighting an infection, it utilizes antibodies, but it also has its B cell memory cells and it has its T cells that also fight. And so just because your antibodies go down doesn't mean that your body can't fight the infection. That's the reason why the World Health Organization, I think today, came out and said that the vaccine from AstraZeneca was still good. It's because it still prevents hospitalizations and deaths. And so keeping it real above the board, I didn't want to get too deep, but you really have to remember that the most important thing is preventing hospitalizations and deaths, not the percentages.
People get hung up on the percentages, like I want 100%. 72 is not good for me, you know? And I mean, listen, if I get the 72% effective one and you just explain that it's actually the Johnson & Johnson one gets better, is that the same with the other vaccines, with the Pfizer and the Moderna?
That's right.
They all get better with time.
That's right. And so I put it to you this way. If we go backwards in time and we're back in a year ago, mm-hmm. and if I stood on your sat in your show and said, hey, look, there's this new virus coming around called COVID-19. It's going to cause you bronchitis. It's going to cause you have a little bit of memory loss, a little bit of shortness of breath, some sore throat, some body aches, but no one will ever die from it and you'll never go to the hospital. Do you think anyone would really care?
Well, if I'm not going to die, I'd be happy. I'll get a little,
That's right.
So, but do those symptoms fade away? Because I know that, sometimes you get a drug and it does something and it might be temporary symptom, an after effect or side effect from the drug. But then there are sometimes, is there anything permanent that happens aside from being immune to the disease?
You make a great point. And so there's a lot of people concerned about the vaccine as far as long-term side effects. That's a great point. One thing you have to understand about the vaccines, any vaccine that's ever been made, ever, we know all the side effects of that vaccine after 2 months that will ever happen. Now, there will always be at least one person that will have a side effect from it, and we'll see it in the studies. These vaccines have 70,000 people in the phase 3 trial, which is unheard of.
That's a good sample.
That's an unheard of sample. Normally, we have in a vaccine, we'll normally have maybe 2,500 in a phase 3 trial.
That's not a lot.
Well, it is a lot.
It is
a lot of people. So, but think about it. Okay, Tony, you and I, we're going to make a vaccine together. We're going to make the vaccine against the Zika virus. Okay. That means we have to recruit people who might have the Zika virus. And that's going to take there's not a lot of people to go try to find to get infected with the Zika virus. You're going to go through a lot of people. So to find 2,500 people is going to be hard. And also it's a lot of people to coordinate, but to have 70,000, oh, that's huge. It's really a safe, well-studied vaccine.
And so what about, like, people are talking about one shot versus two. If you get one shot and you miss your second shot, I heard most recently that the first shot you can wait. I think Fauci was saying you can wait up to 6 weeks before you get the second shot or whatever. What is it? Which is it? It's so confusing.
So the best thing to do is to get the shot on time. In the studies, they had people who have missed that second shot, and they checked their immune response, and they had up to 2 to 3 weeks, and they had a really good response still. But that's not recommended. That's why in the United States, I was on a teleconference with Dr. Fauci, and that's why the United States has consistently said, no, we are not prolonging it. We are keeping on the regular time schedule because that's where the science is. You'll have other governments, particularly the UK, who's trying to spread it out, particularly just from a finance standpoint. You do have protection, but it does dip off after time. But it's just not a good situation as a policy. So in the United States, we'll have four vaccines by the end of the summer. We'll have the Pfizer one that we have now, and we'll have the Moderna, we'll have the Johnson & Johnson that will be approved at the end of the month. And then you'll have the NorTec one. That's one you probably haven't heard of. It's in phase three trial. That is a different vaccine. It's not an adenovirus one. It's actually a nanoparticle, which is different than the messenger RNA or the adenovirus one that we have now.
So is any one vaccine better than the other? Is there anything that is superior in that group of vaccines?
The most important, again, is 100% prevention of hospitalization and death. So now we're going to talk about minute things. The Johnson & Johnson one is better tested with the variants in South Africa. So you can't judge percentages straight across the board because they're not all equal. So the Pfizer and the Moderna in their trials, they were done when they didn't have the UK variant and the South African variant wasn't around. Of course, we had the American variant and it was just the beginning of the Brazilian variant, but they weren't around when their trials were. Well, the Johnson & Johnson actually did one of their trials in actually South Africa and also in Brazil. So they, in their trial, had the variant in it. And so that's why you really can't compare, this one has a better percentage and this one has, you can't compare like that. The main thing is hospitalizations and deaths.
I find it's been kind of difficult for some people to get vaccinated. I mean, you can make a phone call in New York here over and over again, and it's just, and you might even get someone on the phone, but it doesn't mean that you're going to get an appointment. It's just been such a strange rollout. I don't know I'm not blaming anybody for it. All I know is I've had a very hard time. Some people get an appointment immediately, you know, they call, and some people don't.
Yeah, it has not been a very good rollout. Vaccines production is hard, and we always have problems, actually, even without a pandemic, have problems with vaccine supply. This just makes it even worse. I agree with you. They have not well thought out it as well as they could have, and there was very poor planning, but hopefully they'll get it together.
I have faith.
Oh, yeah. It's not as fast as people would like, and the one shot is logistically going to be a heck of a lot easier just from the logistics than the two-shot vaccine.
Now, let me ask you a question. You know, everybody's got a different age. Everybody has everybody's age is different. We're not all the same age. And people have various comorbidities. And also there's sometimes, I don't like to even think of it that way. There's like how obese is obese. I'd like to know that. What about someone that's got like rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, lupus, those autoimmune diseases that are already there where immune system is already a little bit dicey to begin with? Should we be concerned? I mean, I can look up stuff like with the MS Society and they'll say, yeah, take it. But I'm wondering if one is better for, what is better than the other for specific people?
Remember, none of these are live viruses.
Okay, that's good to know.
Let's talk about the mRNA. So the mRNA is they put it in fat. Basically, it's actually a butter molecule. And it absorbs into the cell. So your body isn't being attacked by a virus. It's actually making the protein itself, and then your antibodies go and react to it. So if you have an autoimmune disease that your body doesn't form good immunity, then you're going to have a lower immune response, but you're not going to have more adverse effects.
Okay, so it might not work as well. Is that what you mean by a lower immune response?
That's correct.
Oh.
It's the other way around. So that's why you want to get it. So you want to get it, you want to be on time. And so you can get some protection. Yeah.
And get whichever one you can get. Don't like be waiting for this one because that's more designer to you.
That's correct. Whichever one you can get is the best thing to get. Don't say, oh, I want to wait for the Johnson & Johnson because I think it works better for the variant. No. Just go ahead and get whatever, which one you can get.
And so after a while, what will happen, I imagine, is there will be a herd immunity once people start getting vaccinated. No?
No. I've said this from the beginning. There is no such thing. I hate to tell you this, but there's really no such thing as herd immunity in coronaviruses.
Oh, that's important for people to know, because people are still talking about that amongst themselves.
It's because you had a government in Europe who, at the beginning of this, decided that they heard about this term and made a whole policy that they were going to just not do anything and let her quote unquote herd immunity take care of it. The problem is Homo sapiens don't form long-lasting antibodies to coronaviruses. So you can't get herd immunity. So it doesn't happen. We do well with varicella. We do well with pox viruses. We'll do well with other ones, but we will not do well with coronaviruses.
Are you giving shots? Are you giving vaccinations in your practice on a regular basis? How's that working out?
In our area, like in many states, the states have really kind of gone to the health departments and the hospitals. Unfortunately, I think it's caused a delay. The people who are at high risk aren't necessarily the ones who are going to get it as efficiently. But here locally, it's the health department mainly who's giving out most of the shots, and some hospitals. Also, we have pharmacies are starting. Well, the pharmacies already given out to the nursing homes. They've started doing that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, here we were really bad in right around Christmas time. We were in the top 10 in the country.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
Mm-hmm. The whole state. So Atlanta, Augusta, my area surrounding and South Carolina, all of our areas, we were out of the top 10. We were four of the slots. So all within 150 miles of where I was. So
we still have to maintain our behavior of distancing, hand washing, and mask wearing. Just because I've read this, just because you got the vaccination doesn't mean that you can not wash your hands and not keep participating in the, distancing, masking. Is that true?
Absolutely, it's true. So I'll use a different vaccine. So let's use an example of measles. Can a kid who's had the MMR give measles to another kid? Yeah, sure. I mean, so as far as not ever have to take a mask, I think you will get periods of time where it'll probably be in the fall. When you have a lot of people who have been vaccinated and the hospitalization rate has plummeted, that's where is going to be your true guide as to when you're going to be easing up, is when you're seeing all the hospital start not having as many patients.
Right. And let's pray for that actually comes to pass. I believe that it will. So there will be a time when we might come back to normal at some, but I don't think it's, I think it'd be later rather than sooner. I mean, I'm being realistic.
Yeah. And I think in our culture in fall time, you'll be more used to seeing people decide to wear a mask during the flu season. They'll say, and no one will give them a cross eyed. So we'll see that more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people will give you the stink eye if you happen to forget your mask. I once just forgot and walked out of the house. I got people giving me dirty looks. I was like, what did I do? Here, you want some money? Is that it? Let me see if I have a couple bills in here for you. But then it occurred to me that I forgot my mask. It was in my pocket. I didn't put it on. You know, you go out the door, you have to have your checklist of stuff.
That's right. That's right.
And the mask is very easy to forget. Let me just ask you this question as you kind of segued into that maybe someday this will all be like a distant memory. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety still. There's a lot of depression that I've observed amongst people that I know. I've just heard people talk about it. Is this depression a symptom of corona, or is it just a symptom of what we're going through?
It's a symptom of the environment and all the changes that we've gone through. Could it be the viral infection itself? Sure, it's possible. We have seen SARS-CoV-2 invade the brain area, but mainly it's been in the blood vessel area. So we don't have any studies that have shown that aspect of it, but I'm sure there will be, because there's a great concern that people who've had SARS-CoV-2 might have an increased risk of dementia. So that's a real concern in some of the literature. And so we'll have to see. And so I tell patients who are not, you know, overly concerned, this is all, well, I'll just get over it, like most people do. And I tell them that, you know, we know what the side effects are from the vaccine. What we don't know is the long-term side effects of getting the infection.
That's the scary part, because I know some people that have had it and recovered, but they still can't taste and they still can't smell certain things, you know, like one person can't taste chocolate and, you know, she can't smell like barbecue, which I think it's a little bit, it's disconcerting to know something like this. It makes, you know, I don't want people to feel like scared, but I think you'd be more scared if you just never got a vaccination. So do you find a lot of your patients are coming in with depression because they might have lost somebody in the family, that kind of thing? It's kind of like you lost somebody in your family and three friends died. That's four people. You're depressed.
Yeah, no, depression is really a major problem. I have talked to a lot of patients who, you know, they watch the obituary column and looking for friends, right? So it's a real problem. And then you have the survivor's remorse. You know, you happen to be one of those ones who brought it home, and then unfortunately one of the loved ones passed, right? And so there's a lot of work for counselors to do over the coming years, and a lot of treatment to work through.
Do you refer people, because up here in the North, they have an organization, I guess it's a group of people that are social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists that have formed a conglomerate, I guess, and you can actually make a phone call and you can get yourself a therapist on the phone like that.
Yes, it should be in every state has those hotlines, and that people need to definitely utilize it. Even just to talk to someone is very important. And sometimes you need to talk to someone who is impartial, not necessarily associated with any of the people or the concerns that you have, and just gives an honest second opinion. Just helps just to get it out. If you're feeling that way, even though you say, oh, I don't think I'm depressed, I'm just a little down, well, that's good enough to talk to someone.
Yeah, I think it's important. I would think so. I imagine that you see it all in your practice. I can just imagine what you see every single day.
Mm-hmm. A lot of anxiety and panic. There's a lot of claustrophobia. You have people who feel like they can't breathe because of wearing the mask. And actually what they're having is claustrophobia. That's really what their symptoms are, and dealing with that also.
Yeah. Do you prescribe anything? I mean, what do you recommend for them, for people like that? I know a lot of people like that.
You mean for the claustrophobia and anxiety?
Anxiety, depression, claustrophobia. Some people live in a small place. Some people live in a large place. Some people live alone. Some people are living with someone they're not getting along with.
And you described the whole litany, and each of them are different and unique. Some we will give medications and counseling. Some will just do counseling. And you have to tease out each one of those individual circumstances to work it through. And some people, when they come into the office, you know, just to talk about it and give them different ideas on how to approach it, generally works out too. So each individual circumstances is different in that way.
What do you recommend people do? As I asked you this last time, there is a sort of segment of people that are like single and living alone, and they've been going through this for months, you know, and they don't know exactly how to get in a situation where they can interact. I mean, I can think there's some things that are obvious. It's like get on a Zoom call, call a friend if you don't have one, maybe call one of those hotlines. I mean, what do you recommend for them?
Exactly what you just said, Zoom. Go out in the park. Start doing something that's an outdoor activity that is distance friendly. You can do. And partly in our area, golf courses are booming because it's outdoors and the people are learning how to hit golf balls. I mean, so whatever you can do to do something outdoors, it would be great.
Yeah, that's I think what most of many of us are craving, especially up here in the Northeast where the weather has been, you know, not as mild as it's been over the past few years. All of a sudden, we're getting snowstorms every other day.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. See, that's why I left the North.
That's why you left. Okay. The truth comes out. The truth comes out, yes. And you do seem happier down there,
yes, I have to say.
When you can find a smile in yourself, you know that things are going well, you know. But it is a scary time for many of us, and I'm wondering what you anticipate in terms of, you know, vaccinations that the new president has promised to vaccinate like 100 million people or some huge number in 100 days. Is that possible?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he could probably exceed that. That was actually a little low number, a million a day, pretty low across the country. But I think he'll more than succeed with that. I think he just announced that he's going to give direct supply to the community healthcare centers. I have a friend who runs several of them, and that would be a good thing. A lot of that organization has interconnected where they can target their high risk patients a lot easier. So getting the vaccine out is paramount, and we'll get them in arms if we all can just get the vaccine.
So when am I going to be able to get some tango lessons? I'm thinking just before COVID, I was about to sign up for some tango lessons in Manhattan. I don't think that I'm going to be doing that soon. I'm wondering if they're doing that down in Georgia, Dr. Clark.
No tango. I mean, no. You know, that's pretty close contact there.
Yes, it is. I could use some close. I like some close contact. I wouldn't mind some. I need a slow dance, you know?
Yeah. So I'm hoping if we can get this vaccine out, I really am hoping around June and July, I would foresee that we'll start really kind of doing a lot more outdoor, a little bit closer contact, still wearing masks. And then I would suspect by the fall, if the fourth vaccine is already, the numbers look as good as they do, that should roll out too. And so we'll be rolling pretty good in our country by the fall. The unfortunate thing is that coronavirus is not about us. It doesn't care about national anything. It only cares about Homo sapiens. So our job is to vaccinate the world. And I'm glad we joined the World Health Organization. But, you know, we only have 18 months to really get our act together around the globe and vaccinate a lot of people. Otherwise, we run the risk of a vaccine really doing a major mutation, right? And so then our vaccine doesn't work anymore. And we'll be right back where we were. And so it's not out of altruism, it's mainly out of self-preservation that we need to really be aggressive in vaccinating the world. And I don't care which vaccine you use, as long as everyone gets a needle in their arm, that's the most important thing, yeah.
Well, so I see this COVID is kind of like an existential threat. I'm wondering if the scientists are moving towards treatment now for people that actually have the virus. I just found out a friend of mine is infected with it. She's quarantining for 14 days, but the thing is that she's infected with it. Now, what about those people? What about treatment?
So treatment has actually really improved since this all has started. So if you're a person who has a lot of comorbidities and you're over 65 and you get positive, you should contact your doctor and try to get an infusion.
Of what?
It's called BAM. Just think of the BAM. Because the timing of that infusion, it works best when you're just in the beginning. It doesn't work good when you're getting sicker and sicker. And so then what we found was that dexamethasone or prednisone steroids, they work good when you're not doing as well and you're about to, you know, you're having a little bit more difficulty. We found that the steroids work really well, and that has helped out tremendously. And if you notice over time, treatment and improvement has done much, much better as far as percentages of deaths and things have gone down comparatively to the number of people infected.
Okay, so we're getting better gradually, but it's going to take some time, it sounds like.
We have much, much better treatment. And the laying on the side and laying on the stomach has greatly improved people's progression. And so from a treatment standpoint, we'll end up with more treatments, but the main treatment for any virus has always been and will remain to be vaccinated.
To be vaccinated. So go and get that. And I think that, you know, since we first interviewed with you at the beginning of the year, and I think it was maybe April or something, and this thing was just like a monster that was just so scary. It's amazing how everything has changed in terms of, first of all, I don't think there was a vaccine when we first started talking to you. And then they had different protocol, don't touch your face, don't do that. And now, as they've learned more, it seems like that we're on the, I feel that we're on the road to recovery from this globally. But I'll say I still get a lot of text messages and emails from my friends abroad. They're having a hard time over there too. I'm just hoping that we have definitely gotten a grip on this. It's so hard to know for sure.
Yeah, we are definitely in the last big stretch. We have a finish line. It's just that we got to push hard now for the next 9 months. That's the key. This next 9 months is going to be a real big key for us.
So we're talking Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. I would hope so. I hope before then, but yeah, Thanksgiving.
Hopefully before then. That would be 9 months from now, I think. Whatever. It's not soon. It doesn't feel soon, but it's going to come up really, really fast. So this is such great information. I'm listening to you, this conversation, and I compare it to the other interviews. Things have improved. I'm wondering if it's because of people's behavior. People are distancing better than they were, let's say, 3 months ago, 4 months ago. Do you see differences in behavior and what people are saying?
No, I don't see that much difference in behavior, okay? Because we just came off a pretty nasty Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, right? So there was a lot of gathering. So we've gotten past that. And so now we're going to have a stretch where there's not a lot of holidays.
Right. That's true.
So that's why I said we were in the final stretches before we get ugly again.
Yeah.
So we have a little period of time here until Memorial Day. So once Memorial Day weekend starts, so if you remember last year at Memorial Day, then the summer came, it was ugly, right?
Yes, it was.
Memorial Day weekend, and then you got 4th of July weekend. So we got to really, as healthcare providers and as policymakers, we got to really push hard before that Memorial Day weekend, because people are going to go out and people are going to go to beaches and have parties and do all kinds of craziness. And
the way we do.
That's what you do, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big deadline for us. But what I can tell you is that here locally in our area, our hospitals have seen a dramatic drop in number of hospitalizations for COVID in the last 10 days.
That is very hopeful. That's very encouraging.
Yeah. And mainly it's because the pharmacies have really been pushing hard in our area to vaccinate all our nursing home and personal care home people. So 80% of the deaths, you know, are 65 and older. So, when you target that population who's in nursing homes, you're going to see a reduction in hospitalization. So that's what's important. So we got a really good hope, but we really have to push hard for a little while here.
Okay, so I guess the takeaway from this interview is that we are really on the road to recovery, but it's not time to get cocky. You still have to wash your hands. You still have to social distance, and you have to wear a stinking mask.
Yes, you do. If you're vaccinated, you still have to wear your mask.
Right, exactly. It doesn't mean you can just walk around like Free Willy.
That's right.
You can't be wearing it. I see people wearing it all schwinging with their big nose hanging out. No, cover it, you know?
That's right.
Really.
That's right.
And in terms of just general health and well-being, it seems that it's a good idea to get out there if you can. Take a walk.
The mental health aspect, absolutely. Get outside if you can and do Zoom if you are in, unfortunately, you live in a cold area where you can't really go outside. Zoom and interact with your friends that way.
which is a good thing. And I can say personally, it does help. Some people refuse to do the technology, but I know that I'm so grateful for the fact that I don't have a problem embracing technology, because just for the record, it is not a happy thing. When my aunt died 3 weeks ago, the only way I could see her was on a FaceTime call, because a hospital was good enough to set it up for me. So I was able to actually look at her, and she could acknowledge that she was seeing me, and I was able to see her like a day and a half before she passed. So technology, I'm going to say this to anybody that's listening, if you're like a technology phobic, or if you're like a technotard, it's time to step up, because it's really the only way we can really engage socially. And God forbid you are about to lose someone, or God forbid you're about to die yourself, it's good to know you can make a FaceTime call. And there's nothing wrong with it, because when you see that person on the screen, there's nothing that will make you feel happier than you're able to say goodbye.
Even just from a social standpoint, you can have people who just get together. I have one friend who, they did play acting on Zoom. You know, they read parts of plays and played act and had fun. There's all kinds of things you can do to feel like you're socially engaged.
Yes, I agree with that. And anybody who's listening, I know a lot of people listen to the show, so they're somewhat technologically engaged if they're listening to the show, because this is a show that appears on the internet. But there are a lot of people that can go this far, but they won't go so far as to make a phone call on a FaceTime. They have a problem with that. I just want to put a message out there to everybody that I love. Please, you know, you can FaceTime me. You know, you can FaceTime your friends. There's FaceTime. There's Zoom. There's Skype. There's WhatsApp. There's all this stuff. You can really engage. There's no reason that you have to be so isolated, you know, if you choose not to be. You know, just do it. Don't be afraid, you know, because it's really for your mental health, in my opinion. I want to invite you back again soon, okay, Bob? Will you come back soon?
Sure.
Yeah, because I think it's good, because everything's changing and people have so many questions. You're just like a joy to me and to my audience and to Jim. We love you. We do.
Okay, I love talking to you guys. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And anytime, any questions or things, sure, I'll be happy to be on your show. So it's a lot of fun.
That's so great. And so we have him here. To the audience, it's Dr. Robert Clark, Center for Primary Care in Georgia. He's got all the answers you need, and he's affiliated with a lot of very important people. He's an important person. He knows what he's talking about. He's on the front lines. He knows about coronavirus, and he knows the way we can deal with it. So please feel free to reach out to him. He left his email address within this show, so just play it back. And if you want to get in touch with me, for me to get in touch with him, you can reach me at tonyquesttv@gmail.com. That's where I am. And also you can reach out to me on linkedin.com. Just put my name in the search engine, TonyQuest on LinkedIn, and you can message me through there. That's the best way to find me and the best way to find this show. And I thank everybody again. I thank my director, Jim Brooks, who's got the patience of a saint. And so thanks again. I'll talk to you soon. Okay, everybody, be very safe, please, and be well, stay happy, and be nice to each other, because we're all we got. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.